Corporation and Voc Rehab Vermont, the Central Vermont Job Fair will be held Wednesday, April 1st, 10 to 4 at the Berry City Auditorium. It's a great opportunity for your human resource team to collect resumes, distribute job applications, meet potential new hires, get a better idea of the types of job seekers in our region. There's space available for you to conduct on-site interviews and Wi-Fi access if you'd like to offer online application opportunities. To take part, register by March 13th, please. You can go online to centralvtjobfair.com or call 223-4654. Or email cvedc@sover.net. The Central Vermont Job Fair, coming April 1st to the Berry City Auditorium. Grab this opportunity to attract those great new hires.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Condi. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you had a fabulous weekend. Hope you have a great week, too. Thanks for spending part of your morning with us. Town Meeting Week coming up tomorrow. We're going to be chatting about that in just a moment. Coming up on the program this morning, in our second hour, we'll chat with the author of a book that is intended to be a guide for those of you visiting the Wall down in Washington, D.C., the Vietnam Vet Memorial. An interesting book, very poignant, an incredible experience if you've ever been there. Wow. I have to say, I went down there for the first time. I went to the Wall between Christmas and New Year's this year, and it was really just so moving, such a powerful monument to that war and to the 58,000 Americans that were killed. So we'll chat about that coming up in hour number two. That'll be after we check in with our White House crew. And buckle your seatbelts, because it is going to be quite a week in Washington, D.C. Tomorrow, the speech by the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that has been creating this huge firestorm of controversy, and also the continuing battles going on between the Republicans and Democrats over funding the Department of Homeland Security. Really incredible. So we'll chat about that as we begin hour number two. We'll take your phone calls throughout. You can reach us at 244-1777. That's our local number in Central Vermont. And you can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. Wow, hard to believe. 10 years ago, Frank Bryan and Susan Clark put together All Those in Favor, the Rediscovering the Secrets of Town Meeting and Community, and they're joining us here live in our studios this morning. This book really talked about the health of the Vermont Town Meeting, and we'll continue to talk about how things have progressed in the 10 years since the book was published. Susan, let's start with you this morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Good. Glad to be here.
Why did you guys write this book 10 years ago? What was the point back then?
I think at that point, I was getting hearing a lot from towns that were facing Australian ballot challenges to their town meeting. Let's switch to Australian ballot. And I remember there was one actually in my town, and I called my old professor Frank Bryan because I remembered that he had some data on this, and he was very helpful. And I thought, gosh, you know, this data should be somewhere where people can sort of understand the pros and cons. And, you know, these arguments need to kind of be in one place. And I asked Frank if they were. And he was just wrapping up Real Democracy, which, of course, is his 30-year epic book. And so we discussed the idea of maybe a Reader's Digest version of some of that data that is more accessible to you know, just people who are in the, you know, right there in the trenches, you know, select boards, citizens who are interested in democracy, town meeting participants. What's some of the data around town meeting? What can we learn and moving forward?
Middlesex.
Yes.
Right. So
yeah.
why was your town considering 10 years ago going to the Australian ballot?
Well, I mean, I think most towns have a variety of reasons when they look at it. Oftentimes, I mean, the first issue, of course, is attendance, participation. People argue that you can get more people to turn out to drop a ballot in the box than you can to come to a meeting. Sometimes there's sort of a background energy around, there's a particular issue that they would like to get through, or they'd like to defeat a budget, or, you know, whatever it is. They think, well, I could rally more of my people if it was about a ballot. So sometimes there's that as well. And then, of course, there's the other side that talks about the value of deliberation, the value of getting together face-to-face and actually being able to amend, you know, and change the articles that are on the warning at a town meeting.
Mm-hmm. Susan Clark, a facilitator. Frank Bryan, a retired professor at the University of Vermont, as you heard Susan mention.
I'm the old professor.
And I think you're fitting the bill quite well today, my friend.
Thank you.
Nice pipe and tweed jacket.
Yeah.
So, gray beard.
So, Frank, when you were looking, were you already looking at this trend when Susan contacted you?
As Susan mentioned, my book, Real Democracy, had come out, but that's a...
I mean, if you can remember 10 years ago.
No, I can. I got it. Right. Thanks, Susan and my wife, Melissa. But yeah, I had published a kind of a major academic book.
Is that her name? Huh. Okay.
I call her Lee. Anyways, but I was so happy that Susan suggested this book, and she's really the heart and soul of the book, because she knew, perhaps as I did not, that the word needs to be gotten out in kind of a, we don't dare call it a manual, but a book that's really for practitioners and gets down to the specifics of what you can do to save town meeting. And, of course, she's a huge fan and supporter of town meeting, and she's been involved in them. So it was a perfect match.
And so what did you find in the book? I mean, what's interesting about this change to the Australian ballot, it's almost like a sugar high. You know, you think you're getting this big boost of energy, you're going to get this big boost in attendance, and it winds up bringing you lower than you were before, it seems like. So what happens?
Well, it gives you dramatically lower attendance. When you ask what happens,
I mean,
to cause it?
Why do people fall into a trap of believing that illusion that it's going to increase participation?
I'm not sure they believe it's going to increase participation, but they think it'll increase voter turnout, and it can. After all, a town meeting takes 2.5 or 3 hours on the average. The scholars have shown, and Susan has written about this, that speaking in public is one of the great fears human being has. It's right below spiders and snakes, and it's in the top five, always is. So that it's a difficult thing to do. But I think Susan saw, and I've always felt, that the benefits for that are just hugely rewarding. And when you leave a town meeting, you really do feel good. It's like going to church. Say, I wasn't sure I wanted to go to church this Sunday, but I'm glad I did.
After you go. But so why is it, in your view, a better and richer experience to be sitting around for 2.5 hours as opposed to putting your ballot in and making the same decision you might at the end of 2.5 hours?
Well, I'm not sure you do make the same decision that you might have made after 2.5 hours, and you get to amend that decision. You get to fine-tune that decision. It's not just an up or down, yes or no. Think about life in general, how absolutely boring and horrible it would be if everything was bimodal, yes, no, up or down. And then there's the benefits to citizenship. Every time you speak out at town meeting, you're looking around at people that know you pretty well. And all the horror stories that we build up about how vicious it can become, that's just baloney. People treat each other very, very well at town meeting, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It is a high, and I think we get better public policy out of it, too. We make amendments that are important.
How would you answer that question?
I agree. I think that the decisions are different, and I think enriched by the discussion. And the community, another piece of it, is that the community is enriched by the discussion. Because when we get together and actually not just socialize, but work together, put difficult issues on the table, work through them, have to do that difficult thing of listening to someone who may not agree with you and try to put yourself in their shoes so that you can say, where are they coming from? How can we find common ground? That builds, you know, what they call social capital. It builds community. It strengthens the web and the fabric of community. It's good for community. It's also good for Individuals. I mean, what we see is that, I mean, there are interesting studies that show that if you deliberate on something, which means really, really, you know, take those issues and not just debate them, you know, A versus B, but you know, let's co-create C, you know, that actually changes the way we are then able to perceive information. We can start to see new options. We can really, I think, be better civically.
So why has the attendance declined? I mean, we've always been busy. I mean, people were busy in the, you know, in the 1800s, the 1900s. It's just different busy, it seems like, now. So why has it, 10 years ago, why did you find attendance had even gone down in the first place?
Yeah. Do you want to talk about town size? Or?
Well, of course, there's a series of variables here that matter. The most important one is the increase in town size. That variable is, without question, the most important one. It's a fact, and Susan and I have been, I want to do it sometime, Susan, so maybe we'll try this. I'd like to measure town meeting attendance according to the capacity of the town hall to hold citizens, because I know in our town and in Newbury, where I've gone to town meeting lots of times, you can't get 15%, 20% of the town registered in that hall. So you know right from the beginning it's going to be a little bit exclusive. But I think that overall those quote unquote audiences change, there's just nothing to replace that kind of interpersonal visual reaction. So when you compare it to voting, it's really a false comparison.
So it's really all about just the size of the community getting bigger and bigger and getting more impersonal.
I'm not sure it's just impersonal. I think it's statistical. And that's the first variable that matters. But when you control for sound town size, in other words, if you looked at 50 towns of the same size, you find that other things matter too. And there's some socioeconomic variation. Higher end towns have higher attendance often, but that Australian ballot is something that hurts town meeting attendance a little bit, and those are the kinds of things we're looking at. Certainly, once you control for town size, usually it's the Australian ballot that's present. Night meetings have lower attendance than day meetings,
yep.
Even though you wouldn't expect it because.
Yep.
Because you don't have to work at night, but then again, you're driving out in the dark, in the cold, from 7 to 9, 9:30, and think about it just in terms of how many people vote in presidential elections.
Right.
I mean, that's been going down.
Yeah.
And if you can get 50 or 60% of the registered voters out to vote in a general election, even in a presidential year.
Oh, we're patting ourselves on the back.
We're patting ourselves. So think about 20% that, and that takes what? Well, maybe a half an hour? And there's no psychic damage. You're alone in the polling booth. You don't have to face that neighbor you don't like, or God knows, sit behind him or something. You see what I mean?
Yeah, or speak.
Or speak, yeah.
Yeah. What's the highest that the attendance has ever been in town meeting history?
Oh, I don't know. But I will guarantee you that in some of the very smaller towns, a Stannard, a Victory, a Granby, those kinds of towns, it gets well over 50%, gets up in 60s and 70s. But that's very rare and in very small towns.
We're talking with Frank Bryan and Susan Clark. We're talking about their book, All Those in Favor, which was written 10 years ago about town meeting.
Yeah. Oh, and just to be clear, we did do an update of this book. That's one of the reasons
right.
we're here.
Right.
And so the book that's available now in bookstores has an update in the back that talks about some of the emerging trends in those last 10 years. But I think that you know, the third factor that I'm sure Frank would want to talk about is issues. What do we talk about at town meeting? What are some of the things that we're facing? And that's changed a lot. It's changed a lot in 250 years. But it's also changed a lot in the last 50 years. What is it that we are, what are we grappling with? Are they important issues? Are they issues that matter to me? Not so much on a grand global scale, but on a day-to-day basis, personally. Is this something where when I stand up and speak or when I attend and listen, it's going to make a difference to my daily life? roads make a big difference to my daily life, personally.
Dump so trucks, that's a big one. All that kind of stuff. Can you talk about the example of North Hero? That's one you use in your update as an indicator of this continuing trend, and I mean, it really touches on just about everything you talk about. Moving to the Australian ballot, night meetings, that whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just looking for the data on that because it was sad. I actually went and did a great interview with them, and it was so they had such wonderful attendance. They were one of the highest per capita attendance.
Yeah, I mean they were one of your poster boys.
Right.
In fact, for doing a good job.
Right, yep. And they did switch to Australian ballot. And the town meeting attendance dropped from, I guess it was 28% to like 14%. What that means is that they had a meeting, a town meeting, and they at that meeting they voted to let's make our voting decisions by Australian ballot, by ballot. And we'll still have the meeting. Of course, a town that switched to Australian ballot still has a meeting, but it's an informational meeting. I think that they thought, I mean, I think we heard people say, well, you know, nothing will change. We'll still have this meeting. It's just that we will then, you know, have the ease of voting by ballot and access. Well, people didn't come to the meeting, dropped by half. And 2 years later, they switched to a night meeting. The attendance dropped to 6%. So it went from like 28 to 6% just in the course of a few years. Citizens will come to a meeting if there is a decision to be made, if there's power there. And if it's just an informational meeting, it's just much, much harder to get people out. And as a facilitator, I'm trying all the time to get people to come to informational meetings. They aren't town meetings. They are things about planning. They're things about, you know, other things that happen in communities. I mean, you get the pizza. You get the, you know, kids' artwork on the walls. You know, the band plays. You do everything you can to get out to get people out to these meetings. But there is nothing like power. There's nothing like a good decision to be made at the end of that meeting to double, triple, quadruple your participation. That's what it's about. That's sort of the magic golden key to democracy. Who knew, right, that people wanted to actually, you know, have
talk
a real impact.
Wow.
Yeah, right.
What a concept. Mm-hmm. Lee, if you put these on here, 244-1777 is our local number, toll-free 877-291-8255. All right, let's go to Starksboro. Melissa, good morning. How are you?
Hi, yeah. Can you hear me, Mark?
Loud and clear. Yep.
I just wanted to point out that Starksboro had its town meeting on Saturday, and the town was really concerned about some cuts in our local school budget, which we still vote on at town meeting, not on Australian ballot. And we had a wonderful discussion, and we actually voted to raise the budget so that would actually save some jobs that were being cut. And it was pretty remarkable, and this would not have happened if we were voting by Australian ballot. So just want to emphasize an example of what Susan and Frank are talking about that really happens at town meeting.
Hmm. Frank, you want to handle that question?
No, I do not.
Aren't you happy you remembered your name this morning, though, Melissa?
That was good.
I was proud of him.
Yeah.
This is not a plant.
So did you think Frank was wrong in how he handled the meeting the other night?
No. I thought he did a great job, too.
First time I've been right in some time.
Good chance for us to really discuss this, and I think some people changed their minds during the discussion, too.
So. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me have them talk about it. So, Frank, what was your experience of this meeting? Do you think that's the same? Did you have the same reaction that because of the way the discussion went, it changed things?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that happens everywhere, not just in my hometown. I know in my work that began, 40 years ago, I've been to almost 100 town meetings now, and oftentimes I go to two or three or four a year. And you can now because of Saturday and Monday and so on and so forth. And this is something, as Susan said more eloquently than I am, that really, really does matter, is giving citizens something to not only talk about, but to vote on. It changes the whole dynamic. And that's the key. Once you control for all these other systemic variables, the key variable is power and authority to make decisions that matter for the community. And that has been declining dramatically over 50 years. The problem, and I won't go on further with this, but the problem historically was, though, that local control was considered some kind of a conservative position. It was the old way of doing things, and I'm so much older than Susan that I can remember that if you were for local control, well, the eyes began to roll.
Mm-hmm.
But thankfully, after the revolutions of the 1960s and 70s, when a lot of people came into Vermont that really shared the old Schumacher view of that small is beautiful and democracy is impossible without it, that's really helped, and the political dynamic has shifted so that to be a local controller is no longer politically incorrect. I think it's more and more because of people like Susan and younger people who really believe in small-scale democracy. If we can tap that and then give the town something important to decide on, we can yet save this institution.
Let's go to Middlebury. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I was curious, in North Tiro, you said that the attendance went from 28% down to 14% to 6%. I was curious, did you check what the numbers were as far as the percentage of voters that voted on Australian ballot in those following years when it was 14 and 6%?
We probably have it in the database, but I can't remember it.
I'm curious about the voter participation. If there was 28% of the people that were going when you were doing it by town meeting vote, and then if you had, say, 28% that were voting on Australian ballot, effectively you have the same amount of people that are weighing in on the budget or whatever they're voting on.
Yeah, I think that's true, and I think it's systemic. But again, the key issue is the difference between thin and thick democracy, as some people put it, and turning out to walk into a polling booth for 15 minutes simply can't be compared with the quality of town meeting participation. But the caller's absolutely right. There's a chance you're going to lose some quantity for quality. But over time, and I'm remembering, I don't have statistics at my fingertips here, that seems to level off in my view, that because it really hurts the community overall, and that seeps into the culture of the community.
Right, the argument that I heard, because I've been involved in a couple different communities where they've gone to Australian ballot, and the argument both times was that people that couldn't attend because of, family issues, work, whatever it was, felt that they were being left out of the voting process and not giving, them a chance to vote.
Yeah, that's certainly the argument that's made. There is a difference, and we do see, I think that generally speaking, you get better participation in a ballot box voting than you do at a town meeting. I think that we, generally speaking, you'll see higher numbers. It's hard to say what those numbers are. It's really going to vary from town to town. One of our points about town size is that large towns, in particular, see lower per capita turnout at town meeting than smaller towns. And so that's why in our new update, we really talk about issues that larger towns need to think about. And we're recommending that really big towns, over 5,000 or larger, should be looking at their town meeting participation, their per capita participation, and look at alternatives to a traditional floor meeting. Brattleboro has a great model, representative town meeting, where they elect people to come to town meeting. So you save that deliberative piece. There it is, right on the floor. When you go to a Brattleboro town meeting, it looks like anybody else's town meeting. A group of regular citizens really hashing through the issues and getting to the bottom of some of the questions, holding the select board accountable, all of that work that happens at town meeting. But it is done in a representative way. Another angle angle is neighborhood assemblies, which is something that I know they were looking at in Essex as one possibility. You know, sort of break some of those decisions out, some of that responsibility out to the neighborhood level, because some of these communities maybe have gotten too big for a traditional town meeting. But just plain old flipping a switch and saying, oh well, maybe we're too big for town meeting, let's switch to Australian ballot. That's something that we'd really like towns to look at much more carefully.
What's the representation in Brattleboro? How many people actually do the deliberation?
Yeah, they changed their charter a couple years ago. It's 154, I think it is, something like that. And they're Brattleboro's divided into three districts, so you elect your representative. They call them members, your members, from one of three districts.
Okay. All right, let's go to Williamstown. Rama, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Listen, I'm glad you guys are thinking in the terms of alternatives. They all have a good side and a downside. But real quick, the story from Williamstown was that over the years, with a slowly growing town population, there was a steadily decreasing participation at town meeting. And even this is when everything was being done out on the floor. I supported, and I'm glad we did, we went over for the school financial matters over to Australian ballot. And while we did lose, I'll agree, we did lose some conversation. I wouldn't necessarily say we lost quality conversation, but while we did lose conversation on the floor, including some that led to small increases in the school budget, what we gained by going to the Australian ballot was a definite increased participation by the townspeople who are able to put in their own decision into the process. So I think, listen, it's, you know, town meeting day was set up, and the way it was scheduled and designed was to meet the farmer society. And we have a different society, so we need to figure out, if we want to have the participation, how to do things differently, and, you know, whether the participation comes at the decision point or whether it comes in the policy development phase. You know, we can argue over which is better, but I think we need to have conversations that go beyond just one or two or three or four days of the year. We need to have conversations that we find a way to have go year around. And, you know, it's frustrating because, and once again, in Williamstown, we don't get really much news coverage of what goes on in town. The Northfield News does some coverage. They do a better job than anybody else. The Times Argus won't cover us unless we have a fist fight. The Randolph Herald doesn't touch us at all. So it's hard to have this inside the town discussion that goes on from year round. But I think that's really what we need to be looking at, how not to limit the discussion just to several points of the year, but how to get the discussion going and keep it going.
Thank you for your call. You guys actually have some suggestions on that, including now front porch forums in every single community.
Yeah. I completely agree that town meeting was never intended to be the only time we talked to each other. And it was never intended to be the only time that select board members sat down with members of the community to talk about issues. And so I think a lot of these ongoing committees that happen in towns, you know, planning commissions, conservation commissions, are very important. If you think of, I mean, if town meeting is the on issues of finance and governance, the legislative body of the town, then those commissions, those committees are, in a sense, they're legislative committees that meet during the course of the year. The more inclusive and creative we can be involving people in those discussions throughout the year, the better. The better the decisions will be, the better the town meeting will be. Never intended to be only one day a year.
Is Front Porch Forum is that an effective way for people to communicate within a community, or is there, I don't know, there's something about it that's impersonal, but it also gets into some stuff that's pretty personal.
Yeah, I think technology is tricky we need to be careful with it. I'm a big fan of Front Porch Forum, a great way to get information out, to raise issues and say, well, here's something that's of concern to the community. Here's a website you can go to learn more about what's happening in the town. Here's a survey you can participate in. It's not a great forum for deliberation or debate. It tends to, we tend in this internet age to become polarized and sort of simplify our position statement through a medium like Front Porch Forum. And I think Michael Wood Lewis, you know, Front Porch Forum founder, would be the first to say that when things get complicated, when things get hot, Front Porch Forum should be a great place to tell people where the meeting is.
Right.
You know, it's time to take this off the forum and time to do this in a facilitated conversation.
Well, I mean, trying to have a discussion with somebody, you know, via email or electronically can be really dangerous because you're not seeing their face, you're not seeing the nuance, you know, you're not seeing Frank, you know, crack a smile or something when he says something goofy.
which is quite often. The caller mentioned town meeting created for a farmer culture, and there's some truth in that, because a farmer could get done the chores, come to town meeting during the day, and then go back and do the chores. But also I think that it's wrong to define town meeting in those terms, because even in those days, and I can tell you because I grew up in a small Vermont town, there were many, many kinds of ways that we talked with one another. There are all kinds of social clubs, as anyone that grew up in Vermont in those days knows, and an awful lot of politics, maybe even, I'm sure, more than now, was in face-to-face little clubs of all kinds, and we don't have those anymore as much as we used to have. So the old town meeting wasn't bereft of those things, and we have transferred it more to electronic. And I can't add anything to what Susan says, because she's the expert on that kind of thing. I think she's absolutely right. It's powerful, but it's tricky.
We're talking with Susan Clark and Frank Bryan. We're talking about their book, All Those in Favor, Rediscovering the Secrets of Town Meeting and Community. It's now in its 10 years since it's been published, and there's a new update in the book. So let me get, before we go back to the phones again here, let me have both of you answer this question. So the biggest change in the past 10 years has been what?
Well, I think going to Australian ballot is probably one of the biggest changes. Yeah, probably the most important. I'm trying to think now of just the ones that I participated in. It's a subtle question. I think probably there's as much or more verbal participation going on. I think the data shows this too, once that meeting starts. I think people are certainly willing to speak now, and they do. And I don't think that's changed. It may have actually increased. Our data shows it has just a bit.
I think that we need to think about the change in culture as well. In the last 10 years, in the last 20 years, since the internet, in terms of a society that and our expectations. And some people, you know, might say, well, you know, look at in our modern, you know, techno age, there's really no place for, you know, for town meeting. That's an old-fashioned concept. And Frank has done just a wonderful chart that we include in the book called The Leapfrog Dynamic that talks about that rural agrarian society that he's describing, some of the qualities in that society, and then the sort of industrial revolution society that we moved into that really focused on concentration of power, of wisdom, really focused on authority and a very hierarchical system. Which made sense for the Industrial Revolution, but we are now in the post-industrial age, you know, sort of a techno-postmodern time. And that, here we are, we've come through the open source revolution. Americans and Vermonters are very used to the idea that information is everywhere, and it's not just the experts we need to rely on. We need to, we each individually participate and, you know, look for the information, find that answer, participate. And so the town meeting model actually leapfrogs from the rural, you know, agrarian model right into today. Now, these kinds of networks, the kind of democracy that the open source revolution demands, the kind of flattened hierarchies where you really are engaging citizens, are a perfect match with the town meeting model. So if we didn't have it already, we would have to reinvent it. And that's I think something that we need to, you know, really think about moving forward.
There's just a quick addendum to that, and I think Vermont is particularly situated for this this opportunity, as Susan has always so eloquently describes, because we really did, we never really entered the urban industrial revolution. We kind of leapfrogged that whole mess, so that we still have literally hundreds of little towns. And we still, we come into the, what's that wonderful phrase you used, Susan?
Which one?
something about electronic in the future. We're in, as Nisbet said, phase three now.
Open source revolution.
Open source revolution, thank you, Susan. Without having to clean up the old industrial mess. I mean, it's awfully hard to go to many states in America and say adopt a town meeting because their social structure is so alien to it. They have to resolve the urban industrial. We don't. And that's one of the neat things about being, quote, end quote, backward for so long, is everyone used to criticize Vermont, you're way behind the times. Well, maybe we were, but we're sitting pretty good in the saddle right now.
244-1777, that's our local number in central Vermont. You can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. Let's take a couple more calls here. We're talking with Frank Bryan and Susan Clark about their book, All Those in Favor. Let's go to Barry. Larry, good morning.
Good morning. I just have a quick question, and I'll hang up and listen to the answer. How did the Australian ballot get its name?
Why did the kangaroo cross the road?
I don't really recall, but I think, in fact, it is the case, isn't it, Susan, that it was used there.
Yes.
But that's too simple. I'm scared of it, but Susan will tell you.
Yeah, it has everything to do with kangaroos. No, I think that when you think about early ballot voting or in America, you know, there were parties that were printing the ballots. You were just grabbing a piece of paper and scribbling on it. There were candidates who were like, here, let me provide you with a ballot. So the idea of having the government print the ballots and have them distributed officially was a revolution that happened. I think it was in the early 1800s that it happened, and where we got the idea from was Australia. So I think that's why it's called that. It's not actually, most people in America call it voting.
Mm-hmm.
But here in Vermont, we call it Australian ballot because we have this other way that and, you know, in New England, people with a town meeting tradition have to differentiate between the different ways of voting.
Do they call it that in New Hampshire too, Frank?
In certain Democratic regions of New Hampshire, sometimes hard to find, but they're up in the mountains.
So. Okay, all right. Can town meeting be saved by going electronic?
No, I don't think it can be. It certainly can be helped a lot, and I think there are ways to apply electronic technology to town meeting, consensus voting, for instance. Well, Susan is a more expert than I am on this. So, I think we're going to survive this and use the electronic revolution to our own benefit if we use it, as Susan says, correctly. And incorrectly is separating people from people, eyeball to eyeball. I mean, it's that gathering and that feel you get in that room. There was a guy at the Starksboro town meeting. We had ours on Saturday. I love this. And we were going through that long list of money for out-of-town resolutions. And a lot of folks think we spend too much money on that. But in Starksboro, at least, they always pass. But there was one guy that would do this. The vote would, all those in favor, the whole room goes aye. Those opposed, one strong voice from the room, no, nay, no, whatever. And he did that on every single one. And I walked out of the town meeting, and I said to my wife, Melissa, now that guy, that's my favorite citizen. You know, that was town meeting. He registered that counter position. And lots of times enough of them do that, so we have to go ahead and have a secret ballot.
Sure, and that
wait a minute,
person
that was
also,
not that was not you.
I was wondering
guy?
About that too.
No.
That thought occurred to me too.
That guy.
You know, 1 year it may be one person, and other people hear that and go, you know, that article has bothered me, and they have a conversation during the course of the year. The next year, someone actually stands up and says something. Things can change. That is how social change happens. And if there are issues that need to be discussed, those things can get raised from that conversation.
Let's go to Barry. Jim, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Great discussions. Always fascinating to hear Frank Bryan. I wanted to just kind of point out that there's obviously advantages to both town meeting and the Australia ballot method. One of the disadvantages of Australia ballot is that there can sometimes be mischief or be misleading or ambiguous articles that are misinterpreted. And a good case in point, and that gets flushed out in a town meeting, but not in an Australian ballot. There's a case in point here in Barrie City that one of the articles says, shall the school district appropriate or put aside to spend, there's like $350,000 of last year's surplus on a tax stabilization fund. And I think the average person reading that says, well, I'd rather have them save it than spend it. What they don't tell them is that if you do nothing, the law requires that the surplus go and reduce this year's taxes. So by saying no to that, someone's actually saving 3 cents in their tax rate or somewhere in there, paying for 100,000. But by saying yes, they're actually, rather than saving money like they think they are, they're actually spending more money. And I think in a town meeting situation, someone would be able to say, well, what's the consequences of us voting no? And I just think that's a misleading thing, and I think that type of thing happens more often with, you know, Australian ballot, particularly in the articles, maybe not in, in some of the secondary articles rather than just the primary budget articles. But anyway, I just thought I'd point that out, that there's advantages to both, and certainly participation is a huge factor, and we're always looking for more participation, and it's unfortunate that there isn't more in both types of voting.
Okay.
So I will hang up and listen.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Boy, how many times have I seen that happen at a town meeting where something seems simple, cut and dried, and then someone raises their hand and asks a question. And the whole decision, you know, starts to pivot and people start to ask more questions. We learn so much from that conversation, and it absolutely can change the outcome of a vote.
Yeah, that would not have gotten by that guy in Starksboro. That, yeah.
Whoever he was.
Whoever that white bearded man might have been. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. We'll take a quick break, come back, continue our discussion with Susan Clark and Frank Bryan. We'll be back after this.
On February 2nd, we all wait to see if the woodchuck will make an appearance. Well, shut my mouth, WSMM's Groundhog Opry, the most anticipated music event of the year, is back for a one-month close-to-home world tour. Sponsored by Vermont Country Radio, WLVB and WDEV, will start at the Hyde Park Opera House on March 7th, Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. For more information, Google the Groundhog Opry for tickets and other places we're going to be. Sponsored by WLVB and WDEV, Groundhog Opry, oh boy.
You don't want to miss a week of Your World. You can pick up a free copy at over 250 newsstands throughout Central Vermont. Get Your World at places like City Place in Barrie, Capitol Grounds in Montpelier, Dudley Store in East Montpelier, and Maplefield Store in Plainfield. A full list of newsstands is available online at vt-world.com and in each edition. The World spoke with Brookfield author Nina Gabby about her book, Dumped, Stories of Women Unfriending Women, which will officially be released this week. Also, Twin Fields Drama Club's rendition of Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew is coming soon. They'll have a preview. You don't want to miss a week of Your World. You can pick up a free copy at newsstands throughout Central Vermont. Get Your World at places like Cumberland or Champlain Farms in Barrie, Montpelier, Northfield, and Waterbury. Get Your World at Price Chopper, Hannaford, Shaw's, and Pump and Pantry. A full list of newsstands is available online at vt-world.com and in each edition. The World, Central Vermont's hometown newspaper for over 40 years.
I love Hunger Mountain Co-op because of the fresh and local food and the great sense of community whenever I am here. I'm Susan Becker from Montpelier, Vermont, and I've been a member owner of Hunger Mountain Co-op since 1997.
For the latest weather forecast, call the WDEV weather phone, 800-585-1211 or 244-1172. The WDEV weather phone, sponsored by Twin City Subaru on the Berlin Mall Road. Stop in today and let one of the gurus introduce you to Vermont's unofficial state car.
Continue our discussion. We've been talking this morning with Susan Clark and Frank Bryan. They have an update to their 10-year-old book, All Those in Favor, Rediscovering the Secrets of Town Meeting and Community. Wow, what do we, you know, 10 years from now, is this going to be just kind of like there's two communities that have this as almost kind of poster, you know, representative and just kind of almost like Disney?
Oh, yuck. Ew. I don't think so. I think it depends on it's going to partly depend on demographics, because town size is such a critical element here. Another element of this, here we have just said that our major findings have to do with town size, right, the size of the body, and then also whether there are important issues to be decided, not just an informational meeting, but a real decision to be made. But we're seeing trends, speaking of the leapfrog dynamic, in the legislature, even just right now, they're talking about a bill that would change the way we govern our school systems.
Right.
And that consolidation proposal that's on the table right now looks at, it asks people to consolidate their districts into a size where you would have 1,100 students. In my town, you know, in Middlesex, we have a school with 180 kids. And when you hear the word district, you have to remember what that means is school board. That's the first touch of democracy. So my little school of 180 kids has a school board. This new proposal would, there would be five times, farther away from democracy. We'd have a body that governed 1,100 students instead of 180 students. So we'd have, something like 2/3 fewer school boards. Thinking about what that does to citizenship, what that does to community, what that does to my engagement, how many times am I going to see a school board member at the supermarket? About 2/3, less. What are the chances am I even going to run for school board when it's this sort of, more regional elite body? When we think about the lessons from town meeting, I think those can be extrapolated to other decisions about how we govern ourselves, and they will affect the fabric of our community, and they will affect the future of town meeting as well.
So you see it as a negative, that school bill.
I think coming from the perspective of as Frank says, a small D Democrat, someone who values citizen engagement, not just let's have a representative body that makes decisions for us, but let's have a community that supports those communal resources. And we've talked about slow democracy, the work I've done in the past, how the slow food movement says you really need to understand where the food comes from in order to make good decisions. It helps if you know your farmer. I think it's the same kind of thing with democracy. If you really understand the decisions behind a school budget, you're gonna and it's more transparent, it's more local, it's smaller. Your connection to that and your support for it is going to be vastly different.
Just very quickly, I think that bill in the legislature now is one of the most odious bills that I've seen come along in a long time. If that were to pass and go into effect, it would effectively strip education. They'll tell you it won't, but it will. To larger districts that really have no bioregional coherence or historical basis, and they'll be bigger and much less democratic. And the irony in the hell of it is that it's being defended in terms of democracy and better education. The research on education and the research on democracy both coincide and agree that small is beautiful. In both cases, and if you can keep your schools small, personal, local, they're going to be better schools.
Yeah, but some of these places had, I can't remember that. There was a story I heard on the way in this morning. There was some school they closed down. Had 12 kids.
12 kids?
Yeah.
That sounds about right to me.
Well, I mean, like first through sixth grade? I mean, come on, two kids in a class, right?
Well, I'll let Susan comment on that. But even then, I mean, there is a lot of literature that argues that the old one-room schoolhouse, I mean, we're always saying, well, things are more technocratic now, they got to know more. No, they don't. I mean, the kids still got to learn some basic conceptual frameworks and skills. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I think maybe the most important thing is who's going to decide? Who's going to decide whether 12 is the right number for our school? Really, let's make sure that those decisions are based on, the quality of the school, any other priorities that we want to put in terms of, per capita cost, but also, what enrichment is that student coming in with if you've got, a particularly... some towns that have a more impoverished background, kids are going to maybe coming in needing other needs, special needs. So those are ones that might need additional funding. Those are the kinds of decisions, quality, and not necessarily size, that we should be making these based on. So. Again, my expertise, our expertise is coming from the democracy piece of it, the role that a community has in shaping those decisions is going to affect the outcomes of the school and certainly the outcomes of the budget votes.
Let's go to Cabot. Frederick, good morning. How are you?
This is Cedric Houston.
Cedric, good morning.
Yes. I listen to all this stuff, and I wonder... I have been going to town meetings for 60 years, and I can't go this year. I'm sick. So how do I put my voice in if I can't put in a ballot? Hmm. Number one. Number two, they don't give us an accurate count on the pupils in school. It's an average of the last 3 years, and we're going down every year. Why can't they be honest and tell us how many kids are in school now? That don't make sense to me. Number three, we have had, I think it was last year, the year before, we all vote from the floor for these $6 million, $6.5 million budgets. And town meeting, between the town and the school, it's getting way up there. We have people that cannot go anymore because they go and they get sick at town meeting. They get shot down. They stand up and tell them what they think, and somebody gets up and say, you aren't right, you aren't any good, and the whole thing. And these people cannot go to town meetings anymore. And I think it's about time that we all had a voice in voting on our budgets.
All right, let me get our guest to comment. Thank you for your call, Cedric. I appreciate it. Frank?
Yeah, I think those there's some wisdom there, but I also think that to answer those questions... the best way is to honor the power of the individual system in a group setting, and that's town meeting. It is difficult to go to town meeting. The chairs are not the best usually, and you've got to sit close to one another. But there are ways to get around that. It's also hard to get out and vote. I think that these are technological improvements that we have to make. I think the caller's dead on that, and we have to find ways to do that. But don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. I think the best way to solve the problems this gentleman so correctly notes, especially for older people and people who do have physical problems at town meeting, is to find ways to do that. I know the citizens of Starksboro, Vermont, in meeting assembled would be perfectly happy to do that. I looked out of that town meeting we had Saturday, and I thought, where would I go to get a better decision than to the people in this particular room? And I always feel that way when I go to town meeting in other locales.
Yeah, I know that if Cedric lived in my town, I would be over at his house bringing him what we do in Middlesex. We have remote town meeting participation for people. In particular, people who, because of health or mobility issues, can't come to town meeting, or because if they're in public service, for example, in the military, we have a way for people to participate using phone for sound, and we use the internet for visuals. So you can vote in voice votes, you can vote in show of hands votes at town meeting in Middlesex remotely. It's not like we have, hundreds of people participating from home. Most people, would prefer to come face-to-face. But, certainly people with health and mobility issues, we have, it's been really effective and valuable.
Let me take one more call here. Let's go to Callis. Charlie, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to comment on that town meeting versus Australian ballot. The impression over the years that people have is that the advocates for the town meeting consider if you don't go, you're too stupid to vote. So that's why we should go town meeting. This sounds like Jonathan Gruber in the healthcare guru there. I live in Calais, and I gave up going to town meeting because I'm not good for my mental health. That's all I got to say. Hmm.
All right. All right. Okay.
I really like that call, I do, and I don't agree with it, but thank God we have people like that in Vermont that can call into a radio program like this and express their opinions.
I was more worried about the one before where the guy said he felt really intimidated, felt like he'd gotten shouted down, and that other people had, which you were saying really doesn't happen.
Oh, no, I did think that earlier call did exaggerate to the negative myths that have grown up over time. I think I may have gone to more town meetings than any human being on the history of the planet, because I've been going since I was 20, and I usually go to two or three a year. And I can only remember one situation in all those meetings that approximated the strict negative impulse that gentleman had. I just think it's a myth that we have those kinds of really awful interpersonal conflicts at town meeting. Maybe in the past, but certainly I'm 73, and certainly not in my experience.
And the one you saw, you apologized for overreacting.
Yeah, that's right.
What happened? What's the one you remember? What's the one that really stood out?
I don't remember exactly, but it was on an Australian ballot, and the fellow just said, "Here's what I'm going to do," and he just walked out. And to me, I've never seen like anything approaching like fisticuffs or angry shouting back and forth. The moderators are awfully good, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have, a lot of that mythology comes from a different culture. When I was growing up in Newbury, we had fist fights on the schoolyard. We don't have fist fights on the schoolyard, unfortunately, because I think...
Unfortunately?
We had a guy get up in town meeting yesterday and say, we've got three people keeping the peace during recess, or for the safety of kids, maybe we need more. Let the kids find out a way to resolve their own issues without being hovered over by manipulators from inside the school.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we went down that road. Right here.
No, I'm not.
I see Susan just
cringing.
Getting away from the microphone here.
She's separating.
Great. I ask you a question like, tell me the worst thing you ever saw at a town meeting, and that's the best you could come up with. Brian Williams would have had a much better story.
Don't compare me to Brian Williams. God.
Thank you both for coming in. Your book can be found at all reputable bookstores across the fine land here, right?
Yes.
Where are you going what other town meeting? You've been to Starksboro, so what else are you going to do?
I'm going to try to get to my hometown, Newbury, on Tuesday.
Okay, where you were born and grew up.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Susan, thank you for coming in, too. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Good luck
for it.
In Middlesex. And we'll take a short break here. When we come back, we'll check in with our White House crew. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier.
Public radio fundraisers, political races, the car.